Hi, I'm Leah.
And I'm Bree.
And this is the Bad Taste Book Club, where we talk about the books that you don't want to read with a cover showing.
Yeah, just they're a little bit trash, but in a good way sometimes.
Yeah, so this week we are talking about Have Mercy, which is by
Jada Jones and Danielle Bennett. It's about mechanical dragons, but it's also about people and feelings.
So many feelings.
So I came across this book because one of the authors, to be honest, wrote a fanfic I really liked.
About the fanfic.
Anyone who knows a lot about Harry Potter fanfic will know the Shoebox Project. One of the authors of that is one of the authors of this. I think it's Jada Jones from my understanding. So I love that book. So I read this in my early 20s and ate it up. I remember really liking this book the first time I read it. Upon reread, there's some problems with it.
Yeah, so this is my first time with this book. I actually had never heard of it. It took me a while to get into it.
Yeah.
And I think that's mostly because of, one, the writing is a little,
it's kind of passive. You're experiencing a lot of things as your character telling you what's happened in the past tense, which makes it less engaging to read.
Yeah, and also some of the characters, I didn't like them. I didn't like them a lot. They were kind of asshats.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. So just the vague concept of this is we're in a fantasy nation.
Not England.
But England. we're in a fantasy nation and they've been at war for like 100 years with a neighbouring country. And a part of this is there's an elite dragon corps, which are mechanical dragons ridden by specialised riders.
Which sounds fucking cool, right? Like, amazing. That is awesome.
But we open with there being a couple of scandals ongoing with one of the ally nations, which has two sort of branching plot points. The first one is one of the dragon riders has insulted the wrong lady.
By sleeping with her and then thinking that she was a prostitute.
And offering to pay her, which, to be honest, I would have just taken the money. Like,
yeah, but you're not a fancy lady.
I guess I'm not a fancy lady at all.
Did we ever find out her name?
Probably not. Let's just be really, really honest. This book does not handle female characters at all.
No, there are two, as far as I'm aware, there are two named characters in this entire book who are women, and one of them is a 8-year-old girl, and the other one is her mother, who is a Harridan.
Yeah, I mean, there are some female magicians that show up right at the end.
Right,
yes.
They're
very, very, very minor. Yeah, let's just get this over and done with. This book bad at women.
Very bad, which is bizarre because both of the authors were AFAB.
Yeah. Jada Jones uses them/they pronouns at the moment. So we've got one story which is the dragon riders have fucked up. They can no longer, like, just run rampant and misbehave because they've insulted the wrong dignitary. So they've got a young man from the university there to teach them how to behave like proper adult humans.
So the man who fucked up by fucking someone, his name is Rook, and he's my least favourite character in the whole story. And the man who is looking after them from the university's name is Tom, but it's spelt Thom because this is Old English, and so we have to do the right thing.
No one can have normal spelt names.
No, that would be terrible.
It's interesting that Rook is your least favourite character because he's definitely not my least favourite character.
He's such an ass.
He's not my favourite either. So the other story is another scandal with some foreign dignitaries. One of the war majors has been caught in liaisons with a crown prince of a neighbouring country. And the crown prince, instead of coming out, has decided to pretend that the magician used some magic to get him in bed. And now the mage has been exiled.
And just, if you're going to write a book with gay people in it, I'm just going to give you, like, a little tip. It doesn't have to be anything where everyone thinks it's evil. You can write a fantasy book where gay people just exist.
Yeah, it's definitely, this is definitely one of the books that has a dose of real-life homophobia throughout it. So if you go to fantasy for escapism, don't read it.
You really don't.
Yeah.
Having said that, Royston, who is the magician who fucked up by fucking the wrong person.
Much fucking up by fucking the wrong person in the really, that setting is the scene.
Entirely the whole thing. I quite like the romance that he gets involved in. Like, there are some issues with it, particularly the age gap. I thought that that was at least... That was the thing that brought me into the story, finally. Like, I was like, oh, this is kind of cute.
Yeah, so he gets exiled to his brother's country castle. Yeah, there's a little romance with our other point of view character, Hal, and is the tutor for the children. Yeah.
Which is where we find the one adult female character who gets a name until the very end of the book. I can't even remember what her name is because they mention Alyssa? I think they say it twice in the whole series.
And she is a screaming wife who just is just the screaming wife. That is the only thing about her character.
She faints a lot too.
Yeah. It was interesting because we first meet the wife through Royston's eyes. And I kind of thought at first that her shrewdness and stuff was him just being a bitchy city gay who's mad at coming home to the country.
I mean, which would be fair. But also, no, I think it is Hal, because Hal is the one who's reading the books all the time and she doesn't approve of them.
Ah, yes, yes. Doesn't approve of the books. That sort of country folk.
Yes.
Yes.
City learning. Ugh, no one needs that.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of class issues in this book as well.
There's a whole lot of issues. Basically, the two stories run tandem in each other and you get the points of view of all Tom, Hal, Roy, or Royston, and Rook. So for the most of the book, I'd say the first 70% of the book, they're separated and there's not a lot going on, to be honest.
The first half of this book is very slow. The way, even the pacing and the setup and the swapping point of view reminds me so much of your typical period romance novels.
Yes.
Like, both of these plots could be a setup for a, like, cracker romance novel.
What's a corset ripper if nobody's wearing corsets?
Well, bodices are still a part of the dress.
That's true.
Bodice ripper.
Bodice ripper, that's the one. But what if you're a dude? If it's two dudes?
Shirt ripper? That's my favourite genre. Do we want to just, like, take a moment to talk about, like, the main characters and what we liked or hated about them? Because I think you and I have polar opposite opinions.
Almost. So, I'll talk about my favourites and why they're my favourites.
Okay.
And then you can talk about your favourites.
Yeah.
And then we'll discuss why we disagree.
Sounds great. Here you go.
So, I really like the Roy and Hal relationship. I think Hal is the sweetest guy. And anytime, like, it's very cute watching him work out that he is a gay boy. It is super cute. I really appreciated it. I did not appreciate, I was like, for the longest time, I'm like, how big of a difference in age is there? Because Roy is always talking about how there's a big age gap and that he doesn't want to have a relationship with Hal because it's the country and nobody understands. There are gays in the country, folks. Like, there are gays everywhere. Queer people are literally everywhere there are people. So it's a very slow burn romance, I thought. I did not appreciate the fact that there's 15 years age difference between them because that seems creepy as fuck.
Like, 15 years age difference means nothing once you both pass, like, 40.
But, oh, yeah,
like,
but
it's like when one of your parties is 20?
He's 20 and Roy's 35.
Yeah, like, that, like, as someone who's in the middle of that, there's a big difference between 20 and 29.
Yeah. And look, as somebody who's turning, I have to think about this, 35 this year, I would not want to be in a relationship with a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
I judge people who are in this relationship. And look, I mean, this is set in sort of, I'd say, Elizabethan Tudor times. In fantasy terms.
Vague so olden times.
Vaguely olden times. So I guess you can say, well, you know, times were different, ages being what they were, blah, blah, blah. If you don't think about the 15-year age gap, it's a very sweet romance. So basically what happens is that Roy ends up at his brother's house, meets this tutor, Hal. Hal is all sorts of abashed and interested, weirdly, in this new man who's in the house, who knows about books and stuff and has all this big city learning.
Yeah, and he's a war hero too.
And so he's a that. War hero.
Yeah, we've got to add that.
He has all sorts of feelings, but he's a baby gay, and so he didn't realise Roy was gay because he didn't realise that that's why he'd been sent in exile to the country. And so when he finds out, it's all sorts of kisses in pantries and longing looks over the fire. It's
the boat shed.
Oh, the boat shed.
There is honest to God, a scene in here which is, oh no, we're caught in a storm. Me must seek shelter, shed our damp clothes and huddle for warmth.
Yeah, it's very Mills and Boone in the best kind of way, actually. That was probably my favourite part of this whole book, was the very ridiculous Mills and Boone romance between these two characters. I feel like, though, having said that, Roy doesn't have so much of a character as he does an archetype.
He's just kind of a whiny, arrogant, smart man.
Yeah.
He really bothers me.
I can see that. And the only reason that he kind of, like, Hal's character lends him warmth. And that was one of the good things, I think, about having the split points of view, was that seeing how Hal felt about him made you feel warmer towards Roy.
Yeah. So you really liked Hal's character then?
I think Hal was a sweet country boy and I love him for it.
Okay, that's interesting because I found their romance the slowest part of the book for me because I just didn't feel any chemistry there.
Oh,
it
wow!
It felt like I was being told there should be chemistry, but the whole time I was just like, Roy, stop whinging. You're in the country. Yes, this is what we call depression. Move the fuck on. Which is like, I'm usually quite sympathetic to depression in characters, but he was just so insufferably whiny about having to go home. And I just found Hal bland. Very bland. Like, just this sort of non-existent bumbling character to be like there as a like plot device or a love interest. It just, I didn't feel like there was anything to him.
I feel like I was a bookish kid growing up, so I felt for him. Like, I really did. I was like, I understand what it is to be the person who, like, wants to read when they're meant to be doing other things. I probably put characteristics in him that weren't there just because he was like the blank slate for me as a person. So I can see that.
Honestly is often the point of some characters in romances. Sure. They're meant to be vague shapes so you can kind of put yourself in when you need to. And like, I think at the end of the day, the reason why that part of the novel didn't jive as much is when I do go for romance novels, those aren't the sweet sort of chaste ones are not the ones that I read.
Here's the thing, I like a slow burn. I don't like it to stay a slow burn forever, but I do like a slow burn as long as it ends in fireworks. And See. That is the problem with this, because it doesn't end in fireworks.
Yeah, I don't mind a slow burn, but I've got to have a tension to keep me going.
Yeah,
and
right,
just, there wasn't enough tension in their relationship. But it is, it's really sweet. I remember the first time I read it, I was like, I wasn't rushing as quickly through. I think around the middle I started going like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, get up to the bits I like. This time I was just like, can we just get to the characters I like?
That is one of the problems with split perspective books.
Shall we switch on to the characters I like?
Yeah, let's talk about I'm a misogynist and I have no backbone.
Full disclosure, I like these characters. Rook is trash. He's the worst person. He's I would never like to meet him or hang around with him.
I mean, that's the thing, though. You can enjoy a character without, while also knowing that if you met them in real life, you'd want to smack them in the mouth.
And the feeling would probably be mutual. I am a sucker for over-posturing, like, hyper-masculine characters who are overcompensating for reasons. And that is the kind of archetype that he's walking around, but we don't quite get.
Because I cut my teeth on, like, epic fantasy, I'm a huge fan of the gutter snipe come good. He just doesn't come good.
Absolutely. I'm a really big fan of that tension that you get when that sort of character is bouncing off someone like Tom, who is... He's university educated, he is really likes books and all that shit, but he's also comes from a really rough background. He grew up as an orphan and was raised by the sex workers in the rough districts, and then from there ended up in the university through a series of events. So, like, having a character who is soft and has all this empathy and all this confronting with a character who has... It's almost like you have two people who came from the same point and they're pitted out at different points. And I like watching those characters play against one another. Tom doesn't have enough of a backbone, but he has a little bit.
He has, and basically my problem with Rook's character, and it's not Rook's character's fault, it's that you sold me this book on the premise of steampunk dragons. And it's halfway through the book before you even meet them. So I'm like, okay, I can put up with Rook for a little bit. He is an asshat and he's a misogynist. And, like, basically his whole thing is that I got in trouble for fake raping someone, which, cool beans, guys. That's a storyline that I love. You have to wait for half the book before you even get to him having any sort of redeeming qualities at all.
Yeah, and, like, I think the reason why I like Rook and Tom as a character, as characters, is A, I like their chemistry. Out of the two of them, like, Tom is my preferred character.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's much more interesting. Like, my biggest complaint with him is his rough edges are, like, very bluntly sort of put through. Like, yeah. It's always, like, as they would have said in Molly's Edge, instead of him just cursing.
Yeah.
Which would have felt more natural for me. Like I said earlier, the point of view voice is really passive.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that really lets down the book because it's got a lot of really cool ideas in here.
Yes, definitely.
And, like, I'm in love with what the Tom Rook story could have been if it had more time and more polishing, because you've got these two really strong polar opposite characters bouncing over each other. Like, one of my favourite scenes is where Tom comes in and just lays down the teacher on all the kids and, like, starts treating them like high school boys. Witnessing that was, like, deeply satisfying on a fundamental level, and just watching Rook, like, sulk in the background because all his friends are playing the game. And he's left out.
Here's the other thing is, I'm not sure how old Rook is meant to be, but he acts like a 12-year-old when he's
early mid-20s.
Yeah, probably mid-20s.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how are you this dumb at this age?
I buy that, though, because who, like, has grown up in a rough environment where certain things you've had to put on certain posturing to get through.
Right, yeah.
And then immediately ends up in a military environment, he would have got from the streets to, like, working in the corps before he was even a rider, like, before he hit 20.
Yeah, easily.
So, like
12, 13, I assume.
Yeah, so, like, you just... Like, it does make sense to me that all these people would just be absolute teenage boys. The biggest letdown with the Tom and Rook story is that we don't get enough time with, A, the dragons. Like, we just don't. These dragons talk. They have personalities. We get to see one of them.
They're big fucking metal dragons that are made of magic. How is that not the coolest thing? How is that not all of your story?
Like, we don't get enough time with the dragons, and we also don't get enough time with the other airmen in the actual, like, dragon corpse thing, because, like, they've all obviously been thought out as individual personalities, because we see that when we're introduced to them.
Yes, and they all have names, and some of them I cannot pronounce, so I'm not going to.
No.
But there's the sweetie Balfour.
Yeah.
Who hangs out a little bit with Tom and is kind of a little bit the teacher's pet, let's be honest.
Yeah, he's the soft, sensitive one. He's also the youngest. He was not really meant to be involved in it yet. He was there because his brother died, and then he took over his brother's position.
And there's Ghislaine, who is the other horror show other than Rook. They're like the two ringleaders, I'd say. And then we've got the general.
The general's great. Adama, I think.
Adama. I was like, no, that's from Battlestar Galactica, but it's the same name.
Yeah, he's really good. I wish we also saw more of him, because you kind of get the impression he's someone who Gruff is just trying to keep everything together at the barest seams.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's the thing, right? Like, I feel, and this is getting into the nitpicky territory, but I feel like this would have been a great third book.
Mm.
I don't think it plays as well as it could for a first book, because there's so much history that you only get passively, like people remembering how they were so cool in the wars.
Mm.
And I think if we'd been, like, there when Adama was a general, like, and first had to come up with this Dragon Corps and deal with it, that would have been a really interesting story. But we come in, like, halfway through his life story, and,
come in at the end of the war, effectively.
Yeah, which is, like, it's an interesting risk to take. I don't know that it paid off.
I feel like this is one of those novels that may have actually functioned better as two separate novels, because I think it would have given you a bit more breathing time. Either that, or if the beginning, like, as we both said, the beginning is very slow. And I wonder if some of the fat was trimmed at the beginning to give you more time with the middle to flesh out.
Yeah.
And it might not feel as such a breakneck pace when we finally do hit the plot at a halfway point.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit about that plot before we get into spoiler territory, because we'll do that at the very end. Is we find out that the people who they were fighting have decided that they want to have more than raids. So the war is back on-ish.
Yeah, so it sounds, it's one of those, the way we're presented is this is a war that's been going on for 100 years, and it's just constantly on and off, on and off, on and off. And now it's on again.
In a weird, I guess not really weird for this kind of book, but in a, like, I felt weird about it, is a turn. These guys are the colonizers. The reason that the war keeps on going on is because they full on stole somebody else's land, and the people whose land they stole want it back.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of confusing, because it's like I think the land they explicitly stole is not the nation that they're necessarily fighting. I think that's an expansionist problem.
Right,
but they are explicitly not the original inhabitants of the land, and that is discussed, because there's conversations about wiping out the prior.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just, it's, that's, like, just not really examined particularly.
And Royston particularly, like, talks about the opposition, the Kihans, who they're fighting. He talks about them in very colonizery terms.
There's a lot of explicitly kind of coded as Mongolian. Like,
that's very what I got, yeah.
And that is, like, it's gross.
It is, and it's kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, this book definitely falls into the trap of, it's fantasy, we've changed all the names, so we're just gonna, like, run with these tropes. And it's not racist because it's not real.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it comes off as pretty racist. Like, he literally calls them savages at one point.
Oh, all the time.
It's very on the nose. And, I mean, look, this book was written in 2008, so it's been some time, and obviously sensitivities change. But even back then, I think I would have been like, wow.
Yeah, and it's like, the context of the war, like, if the intent was to do some framing about, like, the damage that war does to the way people interact with other nations or anything like that, if that was maybe the original intent, and as things mutated, it was just completely lost, it's definitely not in the original novel. I don't hate this book, but it is riddled with so many problems. So many.
It's like, there is a really good story. if we haven't turned you off, I do recommend reading it. I don't think they're the, like, if you're not worried about the things that we've already mentioned, like, if that's not gonna
if you're set the sort you of person who enjoys trash, you were dealing with all the, like, little microaggressions and bullshit that you get in trashy pulp fantasy.
Yeah. I'd have to say as well, especially, like, for people who are gay, they do use a kind of slur, like, they call gay people pillow biters a lot.
And Cindy's, I think, is Cindy's, the other one. Yeah.
And so that's gonna, like, be a problem for you, like, content warning, because I think it's needed.
Well, even for some of the racism stuff. Yeah. Like, just be aware what you're getting into.
Like, I've read a lot of high fantasy, so, like, misogyny, oh, I'm pretty used to it, and this book stood out as being quite misogynist. So there's an awful lot of caveats, but there is a really good, like, I mean, it has mechanical dragons in it. That is so cool.
My big thing is, honestly, a lot of this feels like it's written to, like, a hyper point, like, particularly the misogyny. Like, it is
grating.
It is ridiculous. Like, if you met a person this misogynistic in real life, you wouldn't believe they were real. Like,
I know, I've worked with some really misogynist people.
Yeah, actually, that's a lie. I've met people.
I'm gonna do a spoiler warning here, because I think this is where we start to talk about Rook and Tom's relationship, which really threw me off, because I thought that they were going to be partners. Like, I thought they were gonna date, and I was really not into that, because Rook comes across as, like, a super abusive boyfriend.
See, I also thought that they were going to, and I didn't see them as being a good, like, healthy relationship at any point in their lives, but I did expect them to do some kissing.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a hate fuck in this at some point.
I was absolutely sure that the reason why Rook was so posturing was that he himself was not actually that into ladies, because, like, that to me is a trope, like, as old as ever, is the guy who's always talking about all the sex with women he's had. And it just being nothing. Yeah. And that was the kind of character I thought Rook was.
No, they end up being brothers. And it's fucking weird.
It makes no... This is the part of the book that I honestly wonder if it was originally they did end up together, and then there was the publishers were like, we like this, but we can't have two gay romances. And at no point does their relationship feel like long-lost siblings. Because if they're siblings, right? They haven't seen each other for 21 years. And there's this ball scene where he's, like, surrounded by the ladies. This is...
Oh,
this
sorry. I was wrong. There are three named women.
Yes.
This lady gets named.
There is this ball scene, and he's surrounded by ladies, and he's trying to pick out which one's going to be best to be caught, like, cozying up with, that's going to cause the biggest scandal to piss Tom off the most.
Which only makes sense if he's in love with Tom and doesn't know it.
And the other half of this equation is Tom being appalled as to why these women would be interested in such a misogynistic prick, which, again, you would expect that to be a romance scene.
Yeah.
Even preceding that, Tom is asked to effectively keep an eye on the, like, dragon riders, tell me if anything's up, by the king. Rook finds out and decides that he's going to manipulate him by showing him just enough of, like, his soft side and keeping him on edge, which is so a freaking, like,
abusive
romance genre trope BS. I feel cheated, because I feel like there was a really good concept and interesting narrative in there. Not necessarily an unproblematic one.
No.
Like, it was a trash narrative full of all the tropes that I eat for breakfast. But something more interesting would have been there. Contrary to popular belief, siblings don't have an innate connection. It comes from growing up together. And, like, I just, every time I see these, like, deep, meaningful sibling relationships, I just wonder if the authors had siblings.
I mean, I guess they were old enough to be sad that the other one died, and so I see there being something there, but the brother relationship kind of just comes out of nowhere. Anyway.
The plot actually happens, because you're like, there's been little niggles, but, like, that's all, and now you get all this intrigue about why have all these people who have been banished been called back to court?
Yes.
And what's going on? And all this intrigue. And then the dragons start acting funny. And there's, I guess the headaches is the other piece of foreshadowing.
Yeah, I guess so. But, like, half of those were fake anyway because he just didn't want to be in the same room as Hal because he had too many feelings.
Yeah, and then we finally get dumped with this weird political intrigue that's the king is clearly covering something up. What is it? And then magicians start falling ill, dragons start behaving funny, and there's something, like, something is rotten at the core of Denmark sort of stuff. Like,
talking about it now, I think the problem is this is both a romance book and a war book, and they've been mushed together, and it's bizarre to have these two very separate stories in the same book.
Yeah, the only place, like, the romance has is that we have Hal become a facilitator for the plot because he can't go in and see Roy when Roy is finally taken ill.
And he's made friends previously with Tom because they're both sweethearts.
Who felt out of place at
the
ball.
Who felt out of place at the ball.
That's sort of where our stories intersect. And it's just, it just doesn't feel like, I think they needed to intersect earlier. It all happens at the last bit, and it's all very much like there's like a research montage with the magicians, which doesn't work. Don't have research montages in particular.
In fact, let's just get rid of, as a trope, the research montage.
And that sort of, like, solves the issue. There's, like, this one character who we keep getting mentioned every as soon as we're back to court as some, like, big bad who, like, got brought back and why hasn't been brought back, who's, like, a 20-something-year-old boy who has, like, magic powers to, like, fuck with people's minds. And he misused them because he was a 20-year-old boy. Anyway, he's the king's torturer.
Yeah, so that's cool.
That's cool. And, like, he's there. Like, he's got a whole bunch of information because he spent the last month just torturing people to try to get to the bottom of this. And it's just very, like, the pacing is off.
I feel like we've trashed on this book a little bit more than it deserves.
Yeah, I think if the tropes and stuff and that we're talking about are something that is catnip for you, like, if you're like me and you like trash romances and trash people and chemistry, you will probably find this much more tolerable.
Yeah, and for all that I've kind of ragged on this book, I did find some of it very interesting, and I do like the romance is lovely. And if the other relationship had ended in a romance, I think it would have been better for it. I just think at the end of the day, this story needed to be written by people who didn't hate women. Final thoughts. I really like dragons. I think they're cool. And any book that has them in is cooler by having them in. If you're going to write a colonialist fantasy, maybe think about that before you do.
Yeah, if you're going to write a colonialist fantasy, like, maybe question why.
Don't make people brothers who really, really, really needed to get together. That was weird.
Yeah, like, just a heads up to, like, anyone out there who's, like, an editor, who's like, sorry, there's too much gay, you gotta take it out. Or, like, you know, someone hurriedly rewriting a book because they've been told there's too much gay to take it out. Like, just leave it as non-explicit subtext. Don't try and explain the connection as brothers. Because it never, ever, 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 ever works as well as you think it does.
No. And in fact, no family members at all. No. Not cousins. Not sisters.
So my final thoughts are, really cool ideas.
Yeah.
Really cool ideas. And there are some, like, in particular, the Tom character is, like, that slightly rough around the edges, like, bookish character is someone who Jada Jones in particular writes really, really well. It's just such a shame we didn't get more of all the things around the peripheral of our four main characters. But yes.
2.5 steel dragons from me.
Yeah, I might bump it up to a 3 just for the potential.
Yeah, fair. All right, well, thank you for listening to us. Cool. I think that was awesome.
I feel like we rambled a little bit.
Yeah, but I'm rolling my eyes right now.
Yeah, you can't see the faces of just horror that Leah makes every time I become a rook apologist.